Hello and welcome to this week's episode of It Depends. I'm Daniel Pritchett and I'm here with Jesse Brown.
Hello again.
And Ben Robin.
Afternoon.
Today we're here to talk about Alexa and voice development.
As always, you can reach out to us on Twitter at ClearFunction or hashtag ItDepends. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the topics we're discussing here. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about from a couple of engineers like us, let us know on Twitter.
Today we're here talking about Alexa. Christmas just happened. I know my parents have a new Alexa. It was a gift. Went to my in-laws for a minute. They've got one. We are in the business making Alexa-related products, specifically on the web. And there's other related products, not just the Amazon Alexa or the Echo. I'm not sure what they call it, both of them. But anyway, there's an Apple product I just learned about. What's it called?
It's the HomePod, right, Ben?
HomePod, right? Yes.
Yeah, and then it's Google Home is their version of it.
Yeah, I feel like this conversation tends to get a little confusing because we start to compare apples to oranges. So if we just want to talk voice assistant software, maybe, Amazon's solution, if I can use that word, is Alexa. Mm-hmm. Apple's is Siri. Google's is Google Assistant. If we want to talk speakers, like physical hardware devices, it would be Amazon Echo, Apple's HomePod, and then the Google Home that people have seen.
Yeah, and the confusion is not unwarranted because...
No, not at all.
You know, while Apple's the only one making, I guess they have Siri on the phones and now they're going to have the HomePod, Amazon's really muddied the waters because Alexa is the platform
and
they allow other vendors to make Alexa products, right?
Right.
Like you've got Sonos, who's got a recent speaker with the Alexa platform built in it, and there's other Alexa-powered devices as well. And so it makes sense, but it is really confusing when you're first starting out.
And you had each of these particular companies coming in from different angles to the sort of space, the voice development space that we're talking about today. Yeah. So Amazon built Alexa as a thing. Google rebranded their search machine learning engineering as Google Assistant. And then obviously Siri started on the phone and is now going to be on a speaker.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I guess we can talk a little bit about why are people buying them? Like what's the appeal for you, Daniel?
For me, I really like programming, automating stuff, like take some text input, generate text output. You guys know I'm into chatbots. So for me, that's the easiest, most successful way to do it. Just think of it as an entry to programming toys, doing interesting stuff, real-world interactions, crossing the border of my computer. Right now, I've got stuff like smart light bulbs that I can turn on and off remotely from my phone.
Yep, same here.
A lot of people do that sort of thing with an Alexa or a Google Home, like turn on the lights, turn off the lights. So that makes sense.
Yeah, that for me is the number one reason that I use anything. I don't actually own any of the actual devices, but I do use Siri and occasionally Google Assistant on my phone. And the only thing I really use those for most of the time is for turning off like smart plugs or smart lights.
Right.
I feel like the really advantageous use case of it is somehow front-ending all of the information that I have access to in the internet, like in the World Wide Web, but making it more meaningful and usable and actionable, really, to me. So if Alexa just knows a certain subset of things that I actually care about and has that information ready to me with a simple phrase or question, that's really interesting to me. And that could be really interesting to a lot of businesses.
Huh.
Yeah.
So do you think of it like hands-free internet or like specific bespoke internet that does a couple of things really well instead of all the things a little bit?
A little bit of both. So right now I primarily use, so I have a Google Home and two Echo Dots, which by the way, I guess we should say, if we say any of the wake words on this and people are actually listening to this on their device, it could alert it for some sort of action, but maybe we'll have to beep those out or something. Anyway, I find that the Google Home is really good at voice search. So
makes sense, right? Google being the search giant they are.
Right. Anything that Google knows, I can get with my voice without having to open up a computer or pull up my phone or whatever. Maybe my phone's charging in the other room. I don't know. Huh. And I just want to know a little bit of information about Sammy Sosa. I don't know. It was the first person that came to mind. Whereas Echo is a lot better at home control stuff, like smart home stuff. So turn off my lights, play some music, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you guys foresee a near future where anyone who's interested in these things need to have one of each? Like, I feel kind of dumb for having Google Video on one device and Amazon Video and Apple Video on the other devices, and I have to get one of every major platform to get what I need if I want to rent a movie, for instance.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're kind of heading that direction. Like, I'd like to think that they would kind of converge a little bit for consumers, but it seems like they're going the exact opposite recently with the disputes with, like, YouTube on the Amazon devices that hit off just a few days ago or something like that, where YouTube was pulled from all the Amazon devices. So, you know, they're having the little sparring match out in public, and I don't know what's going to happen there, but it's kind of like if you're in mobile app development, you kind of have to have Android devices and iOS devices. You can't you can't really trust the emulators or simulators 100%. And so I expect for like a development shop, if you're actually getting into the voice game and trying to make apps for your clients or for yourself, you'll probably end up having to own all of them at some point, at least for development.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Is one of the benefits of like the kind of work we do at an agency in voice development is you can get cross-platform. So we can code against Alexa and Google Assistant, and you won't have to just have one specific platform. You can reach your customers on both.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, I guess we can talk a little bit about the kind of the technology behind it. I guess why are these things becoming as popular as they are? Like, what changed to make voice possible in the way that it is now? I mean, I guess Alexa was one of the first that really came to the market with, you know, kind of a general purpose language processing device that for made for consumers.
Yeah, Daniel, you've mentioned in the past on the chat episode in particular that Alexa and chat are not all too dissimilar.
Sure.
I mean, you're really just passing a string of text message across and doing something with it on one side and then sending something back. And
yeah, it's really natural language processing of that text that is kind of
the
thing that's really changed over the last few years. Because I guess, you know, for a long time, even back when you were just, you know, I don't know, in the 90s when you would, or probably even earlier than that, I just don't remember, but when you would call and you have to, like, they'd say your street or whatever, you know, you don't have to type it in or anything like that. You could say it to it and then it would read it back to you. You know, that was the earliest form of dictation, right? And so, like, dictation has been popular for smartphones and computers for a great number of years. And then I guess now with the machine learning and AI stuff coming around, you've got servers, just huge server farms that are trying to find meaning in those in that text that's been dictated.
That's a really good point, the connectivity. Like, I know Dragon, naturally speaking, was available for Microsoft Word 20 years ago, and you could talk to your computer, and after you trained it, it would kind of work. But now you've got the proliferation of high-bandwidth mobile devices. Like, when you talk to the Google Assistant, your little cell phone is not doing all the work to figure out what you just said or what it means. Like, it's just compressing and shipping off your audio to Google, and then their giant server farm, wherever it is doing all the thinking, like Jesse said, and maybe adapting to that in a way that push-based software updates to your app store wouldn't get you.
Right.
Yeah. I think there are still some interpersonal hurdles as well. Obviously, the natural language processing is one of the technical hurdles, but it feels like we're on sort of the edge of this becoming really, really widely used. Because we still have, so I'm thinking of like, even up until recently, when you call Apple's helpline, for example, and I think AT&T does this as well, the automated voice thing will say, I'm a sophisticated machine and I can handle full sentences. And so it has to sort of remind you, hey, you're not talking to a person, but I can handle the way that you talk to me like a normal person.
Yeah, my favorite thing to do there is just hit 000 as fast as I can, and then they'll usually send you to an operator so you can talk to a real person.
Yep.
Because as good as these technologies are, it's still worth saying they're in their infancy.
Right.
And so you're going to get a lot of wrong responses from your devices, like today. Even though they're shipping to consumers, millions of consumers, you know, language has a ton of variations, a ton of different pronunciations, and so the intent's not always clear. And so there's a lot of times where they'll just say, I don't understand what you're asking. And so, and that still happens today, even though we're just, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of where we were just a few years ago.
Well, and part of the advantage of machine learning in particular combined with this is being able to intelligently predict maybe what they might have meant and then suggesting that.
Exactly. Using like the next thing that they do get right to improve on. They're like the most likely the words are similar, but like we somehow didn't detect it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is clearly the intent they wanted. They continued down this path. And now that improves it for the next guy who says it the way you did.
Or even the super simple, these are the things I can do.
Yeah.
So why don't you try one of these?
Yeah. I like that you mentioned the word intent. That's a pretty core piece of the Alexa story. We've all been working on that some in the last few months. Is for a plain chatbot, you might say, read this string of words as an input to that. But with Alexa, it's more like, define the specific intents you might have. Like one of them might be, I don't know, unlock my door, lock my door, start the dishwasher, turn on the lights. Those are all specific actions that you want to request. And then once they're identified, then you as an Alexa skill manager are going to feed in, here's 20 different phrases that all express a desire to achieve the single intent. So that way you can sort of separate all the different words or phrases people might use from the one thing they're trying to do.
Yeah, and in sort of the lingo that they use in voice development, especially with Alexa, but it's really cross-platform. I think Google is doing this as well with Dialogflow.
Mm-hmm.
But you declare your intent, like you mentioned, and then you have your utterances against those intents. So those are the kinds of things I might say to the device.
That's a good point. I think Android had intents years ago. Yeah, like I've never like, really gotten into mobile.
That's a big part of the Android development, right, is the intent to like, that's kind of what they call the share sheet in iOS, where you're like, I want to send this to another app. And so like in the Android world, that was sort of how apps share data between them securely so that, you know, one app's not like reading the database of another app. Instead, you can share it with intents and say that, you know, I want this data in this app or whatever. But
so
yeah,
it's like an API where it defines, like, you tell the OS, I want to send this to somewhere and this is where it needs to go. And then the OS moves it without you having to directly talk.
Yeah. But yeah, the, intents are also, they also have like variables. I'm going to call them variables here, but I think they call them like events. And
custom slot.
They're custom slots in Alexa. Yep. And I think they're events in a Google Assistant or something like that. I may be wrong there. But anyway, that's like the best example is kind of like turn the kitchen light on. And so like if you think about it in a chatbot, you write a regex to look for like on off after the word turn or multiple of words, right? And then you have like, where living room or kitchen would be, you know, variable like room, and then on, and then, you know, so it's, those are the, that's still what's happening behind the scenes. So like you said, if you've, you know, if you listen to our chatbot episode and you've written against chatbots, they're basically just a bunch of regular expressions. And you can imagine that in its most basic form, so is a lot of this language processing, right? Where you've, you know, of course you're using machine learning and it way more advanced than your like random chatbot regular expression, but you can kind of write a rudimentary version of it with just some complex regular expressions. And that's where it, with Amazon and stuff, you give it your utterances. So you say like turn X off, turn X on, like switch on, switch off. And like you can imagine building a regex with all those different utterances. Like,
is
you
there
know,
a
dynamically.
Programmer friendly option like Alexa toggle light status? Would that work? Because off and on, well, that seems hard to do.
I'm glad that we've got away from the toggles. You know, I remember when TVs never had off and on, they just had toggle. And when you had those like smart remotes that everyone had like way back when, if they get out of sync, they would just, you'd be like, yeah, turn the TV on, and it would just flip it off. You're like, oh. Terrible. We're past those.
I'm not quite smart enough for a three-way light switch either.
So besides the actual devices, you know, the Alexa platform, the way that you kind of interact with it as a developer is it gives you those intents that we just talked about, right? Like you don't normally get the raw input. You never get the raw input of actually what was heard by the Alexa device. You know, you can get the raw text that they parsed back, or you can listen to the intents themselves, right? And so, most people recommend coding against the intents that the platform has determined, you know, parsed out for you based on your application submission. You know, you when you submit an application to the Alexa platform, you give it the intents and the utterances, and from that they can they of course use that in their engine to kind of figure out, when I ask it to turn a light on, it'll tell me that, you know, light switch, you know, with these variables was what they interpreted to be what the user wants to do. And then from your back end of your, you know, your stuff, you end up returning back. It's just, at this point, it's just a standard REST API where you have to return back a response of some sort that meets the criteria that the Alexa platform is looking for. And obviously doing what you were actually supposed to do, whether that's storing some data, returning back a string that says, yep, we did it, or, you know, I failed to do it. I couldn't find the living room, or, you know, couldn't connect, or whatever you need to do.
One thing you just mentioned about getting a specific intent from Alexa versus getting the raw input—it's got me thinking about the tension between their platform and you as a value-added service. Like, if you have aspirations to add a lot of value to the ecosystem, you'll probably want to get as much information as Alexa can give you, so that you can figure out what to do with it and maybe infer more meaning. But on the flip side, Amazon may be just as happy to keep it all to themselves and just give you a specific thing if and only if they can figure out a meaningful intent. Have you guys seen the shape of Alexa change at all in your time working with it? Are they going in a direction that's more
some,
or less
there's some tension
developers?
There. Early on, I think that they recommended not getting the raw text that was there, but I think they've kind of changed their stance on that in recent times. I'm not exactly sure like the dates or anything, but last I looked, it seemed like they were okay with you doing that. Cause you're kind of taking that hit yourself. Right.
Yeah.
But to the reason they were probably a little hesitant to do it is it makes it, if every developer did that, then the quality of the actual like intent parsing is going to be significantly lower than the Amazon platform, right? And so,
but on the flip side, you either have a minimum floor to quality where at least Alexa is getting the translation right, or you get a ceiling where Amazon's never going to give you the information you need to do something really magical. So I don't know if they can have it both ways or which way they choose.
Right now they have it both ways. And so so they're open for you doing that.
It does seem to me like that's the most open, at this point at least, that's the most open of the three platforms that we've talked about so far is Amazon's Alexa platform. I think it's advantageous for Amazon to provide as much help to us as developers as possible. So if you think about a platform like the iPhone, like iOS, one of the main reasons it's taken off so well is because of the App Store.
Yep.
The third-party developers could put their apps on it that people wanted, and so they would get an iPhone for those, you know, system-selling apps, if we can use the old gaming term. And in the same way, I think people really like... there's a lot of people who really like, whether it's strange to us or not, who really like the idea of ordering a pizza from Domino's on their Echo Dot.
Oh, yeah.
If I can get an Echo Dot, and it'll get me a pizza right to my house just the way I want it, you know, my favorite flavor or toppings or whatever, in 30 minutes, then that sounds really enticing. And that pays for itself after, you know, what, two or three times?
There's a lot of apps out there. I'm not really sure. I've seen some interesting ones for, like, storytelling. Like, those are kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. It kind of brings the text stories to life, where it's like, do you turn left or right? You know, and it's like, I turn left. Yeah, choose your own adventure. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting that they have, some apps like that. I think kids really enjoy that. Kids really do love the voice interaction. It's something that they can understand a lot easier because it is supposed to be natural language processing, right? So, like, they don't have to put too much thought into asking it a question or, phrasing it in exactly the way that like Siri first needed you to, right? Like if you wanted to send a text, it was pretty much like you had to say it exactly the way Siri wanted, or like it just didn't know what you were talking about. It's less like that today. And so I think it lowers the barrier and definitely accessibility for people who have, who can't use smartphones very well. Like the voice added assistant stuff is just amazing for them. It changes the way they interact with the internet and the devices in their house. You know, like smart homes are amazing for that.
It's funny that you bring up children in particular. It seems like the implications for education are massive, or could be, right? The dialogue format of me learning some subject in conversation with this voice thing, it could be huge. I mean, it could really take off.
Yeah, and we talked about the, how similar it is to chatbots. And one of the things that, we've been playing around with before is the Microsoft Language Understanding. It's called Microsoft Lewis is the way to pronounce it.
Language Understanding Intelligence Service.
Yeah.
I think
it's basically a way to send a string of text to this service that you've configured your intents and things like that through, and then it will just a string of text, no voice, and it will turn it into intents just like the Alexa platform and the Google platforms. And so this can allow you to use this as a back end for the multitude of devices that are out there, as well as for your chatbot, right? Instead of your chatbot doing regex, you could just have a catch-all of anything that they chat with me. I'll send it over to this Lewis service, and then it will return an intent, and then you do your actions. And so it allows a lot deeper understanding of the variations of English text, so that you don't have to you don't have to do a Slack bot command that's exactly what it needs to be, as long as it just sort of looks similar enough to the English language that it would understand it, then you're golden. And it's also it has a learning data set, right? So you have to go in there and train it, and so you can say, this one should be this intent. And like, so you can look at the failed ones and things like that and help it learn for the next time.
And we've actually done a little bit, experimented around a little bit with the catch-all intent, right? Daniel, do you want to talk about that?
One of the first Alexa skills I set up was a catch-all intent. It was basically, I think I was leaving a message, like just dictation. So say, Alexa, tell app XYZ, hello world, or this is what I wanted for dinner. And it would take that text and capture all of it as the variable or whatever. What did you call them before, the slots?
Yeah, they're slots and custom mm-hmm. slots. And
custom slots.
So my intent was leave a message. So the preamble is Alexa, which wakes up the device. Then I had to follow up by invoking the app by name, which is tell clear function. And then follow with I don't know if I went straight to the catch-all or not. But anyway, it wound up catching everything after the first few words of the mm-hmm. sentence. And then I could take that and do what I wanted with it. So you could definitely build a generic sys service, maybe send that off to Louis. For instance, Louis. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is cool to imagine using the Alexa style of separating intents from invocation phrases for things like chatbots. Because yeah, all the chatbot skills I write are fronted by the three or four regular expressions I dream up before I think, that's probably enough.
Well, and in the catch-all intent case, you've leveraged the most helpful, meaningful part of Alexa for us, right? Because you've turned sound into text, something I know and can deal with
mm-hmm.
already.
I'll be curious to see, you know, and where do you think the future of these devices is going? And like, do you think there will be, you know, a surge of custom app dev on these sort of devices in the future? Do you think they'll, you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out where they'll be in 5-10 years. You know, I think in the short term they're selling like hotcakes, so they're definitely being used, and there's plenty of app development going on today. I'm curious to see if something like Amazon will end up making like an Alexa phone. They've kind of started that way with a screen with the Alexa Show. So I don't know like if they're going to come full circle and like, you know, Apple started with Siri on the phone and now they've made a speaker. And I don't know if like Amazon's going the other way where they started with a speaker and eventually end up, you know, because they've already got it, of course, on the Fire Sticks and stuff like that, being mm-hmm. able to do all that. So I don't know if like, yeah, I don't know how this is going to spread.
A lot of it is limited by development. Third-party development could make this platform as a platform really take off.
Yeah.
I mean, we've even just spent even just a few minutes of daydreaming, as Daniel likes to say, imagining about what we could do with this thing. And there's a lot of power and intelligence that we could build into it, given the opportunity. So how much is Amazon going to open it up? How much is Google going to open it up, and so on? And how much are businesses going to be willing to imagine what the possibilities could be? And pay people like us to build it.
Yeah. Right. This really strongly reminds me of the widespread advent of smartphones, like starting with the iPhone in 2007, quickly there's an app store, and then suddenly businesses want to have an iPhone app, and they want to have an Android app. And so you're asking development teams, can you make both? And they'll say, well, it costs twice as much. And then you think, well, can I make one that I can write once and run on both platforms with a certain tool that runs it in multiple places?
Do you think the visibility of apps, like, the one thing that I find concerning, I guess, is the visibility of apps. Like, the App Store is a perfect example of, like, the reason people wanted to be in the App Store is because if you went and searched for GPS, then, like, you know, a GPS app shows up in front of you, right?
Right.
And there's no way today to, like, ask any of those platforms to install a GPS app. You have to kind of go and hunt for it on your computer. Like, from the device itself, you can't just
or
be
your
like,
phone.
You know, if you know exactly what it is, I think you can, right? I think you can install some, but, you know, for the most part, you can't just, there's no visual, like, help to be like, what's the best app for this, right? Well, without you having to go to a computer somewhere.
I've messed around with Alexa on my phone, and I think you can browse an App Store like experience.
Yeah, just bit from the device itself.
Yeah.
Like, from,
I don't know.
Like, is that a problem? Is it not a problem?
I don't think so. I think it's reasonable to expect that the vast majority of people talking to Alexas are going to have a cell phone close at hand.
I agree.
And if they get into it, then they'll set up the app. I mean, yes, it's not as easy as the closed loop of having the Apple App Store on your Apple iPhone,
right,
et cetera, but it's not bad.
Does that position, like, Apple and Android much better, like Apple and Google, in a much better position long term? Because you said everyone, there's already a phone in everyone's pocket from one of those vendors, very likely, right?
Yeah.
Software vendors.
Theoretically, it does.
But it hasn't.
Amazon got into this space, I mean, what, at least a year, maybe 2 years before anyone else did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they have I mean, the Alexa app on your iPhone, I use it, it is pretty darn good. I mean,
do you use the Amazon App Store? Like, I had that on Android for years, and I think I downloaded one free app, and I didn't really stick with it.
Never had Android, so.
Can you imagine Amazon app experience for your Alexa on your iPhone? I mean, are we worried that that's the core point, that they've got to be on those, have to be able to sell it in that way? Like, I know that the App Store itself, the search experience can only do so much for you, and there's lots of people out there who are buying ads. Like, for the biggest iPhone App Store games are the ones that are paying tons of money to spread ads all over the web so people click through and get the App Store links.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting things about the Alexa platform is the fact that you can make your own Alexa devices. You know, with your own, like, Raspberry Pi, you can install an Alexa module, basically, right? And then you can integrate with it. And yeah, I think that's pretty cool. Like, watching people, I saw someone turn a Furby into an Alexa. so that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that feels inevitable to me, just based on what I've seen with streaming video on all the different things that we mentioned earlier. Like, I've got a Roku at home, which runs Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Video and some YouTube stuff. I think it doesn't have, maybe it doesn't have Google Video, definitely doesn't have Apple, but
yeah, the fragmentation of the videos is actually what has me a lot worried about these platforms, is the fact that, you know, they're getting in these spats, right? And so suddenly, like, maybe you won't have, like, let's say they have the Alexa app today on the App Store. Well, if you know, Amazon and Apple get into it one day, like, there's nothing stopping Apple from pulling that app. They don't have a monopoly, because Android has just as many users as Apple, if not more. And so, you know, you get into this weird power struggle where, like, I know Amazon wasn't selling some devices from some other people, and then, like, and then they shut them off, and then they shut them off. It's just, I don't know. I'd like to figure out how to get around that.
I mean, that's part of the urgency of cross-platform, for one thing. But then I also think, you know, at least in that specific example, Prime Video just came to the Apple TV. They seem to be having a pretty good partnership at this point. So
yeah,
that doesn't seem
yeah.
likely in the near future.
All right. So speaking of cross-platform stuff, you guys recently worked on a project related to cross-platform voice development. Would one of you like to talk about it? Maybe, Ben, you could give the overview of what it is.
So we just launched a product here called Clear Function Digital Experience. CFDX is what we like to call it. And you can, if you'd like access, you can email us at digital@clearfunction.com. With it, you can build your own custom news flash. So, you know, when you say, Alexa, give me my flash briefing, you can build in your own news items and events that you want to alert your customers or business users or whoever's on your skill or your app about, and you can control that on an immediate basis. And then you can also build a question and answer skill as of right now, where you can set in a list of, you know, who's, you know, the one that we always played around with here was who runs this ship, and it would answer Colin because that's our boss and we like him. So you can have your own list of questions and answers on Alexa as well.
Yeah, it was an interesting project to integrate and learn kind of some of the APIs that we were less familiar with around Alexa, and also doing, you know, the investigation for this will eventually be cross-platform. Right now we're starting out with just sort of Alexa in its infancy here, but we'll be coming through with the with a more generic back end to hook to all the other voice services. Yeah, it was a fun project.
All right. Thanks for that discussion on voice development and Alexa, guys. I think we're about out of time. Once again, I want to remind everybody that we have a Twitter account at ClearFunction, always publishing with the hashtag #ItDepends. Reach out to us. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, let us know if you've got a new voice assistant that you're playing around with from the holidays. Thanks, everyone. You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.